again with a sense of joy and pleasure at having the opportunity to hear the Dharma teachings, knowing that whoever we were in previous lifetimes, we worked very hard to create the merit, the good karma that led to our having this possibility in this lifetime. And so let's not waste this opportunity, waste the efforts that we put in previous lifetimes to gain the present situation. And instead, let's really use it to learn the Dharma, reflect on it, and meditate on it, and put many good imprints on our mind stream for future lives. And particularly, we want to put the imprints of bodhicitta on our mind, because that's the thought that will push us, or lead us, or inspire us towards full awakening. And we also want to put the imprints of the wisdom realizing emptiness on our mind stream, because that is what actually cuts and eliminates the afflictions and the ignorance. And so with the thought to benefit not only ourselves but all other beings, then let's listen with this kind of motivation. So, we may have heard this many times, but I've realized with some people it doesn't go in, and we need to hear some things many times. And that is, you know, the relationship between conventional bodhicitta and the wisdom realizing emptiness, and why we need both of those to become fully awakened. So they say that you attain awakening like, like a bird needs two wings to fly. So we need method and wisdom to accomplish the path. So method is the bodhicitta and all of the actions that we do, you know, generosity, ethical conduct, patience, fortitude, and so on, that we do motivated by that. And, you know, the wisdom realizing emptiness is the wisdom aspect of the path. So both of those are needed to attain full awakening. And they have different functions, even though they support each other. Okay? So bodhicitta is the aspiration to attain full awakening for the benefit of all beings. Yeah? Bodhicitta alone will not get us to full awakening, because bodhicitta is that aspiration, you know, which is so beautiful and so noble and so really wonderful. Yeah. But bodhicitta, the conventional bodhicitta itself, does not see the reality of how things actually exist. Okay? Bodhicitta is, you know, really active in helping us to accumulate a lot of merit, but it doesn't see the ultimate nature. Okay? Wisdom, on the other hand, especially here we're talking about the wisdom realizing emptiness, realizes the ultimate nature, but it alone can't get us to full awakening. Because without that aspiration for full awakening, we simply have renunciation of cyclic existence, will attain arhatship and not full Buddhahood. Okay. So what is it that actually cuts the root of samsara? It's the wisdom realizing emptiness. Okay. Bodhicitta can't cut the afflictions. It can help diminish them, but it can't cut them. Okay, so the wisdom is really important. But the wisdom without the bodhicitta will lead us to arhatship, but not to having the full capacities that a Buddha does to be of great benefit. Okay? Now, what gets confusing is sometimes they speak of bodhicitta as ultimate bodhicitta and conventional bodhicitta. When they divide bodhicitta in that way, then conventional bodhicitta is what we were just talking about. And ultimate bodhicitta means the wisdom realizing emptiness. Okay, so don't get confused. Okay, so I wanted to review a little bit because, it's been about a month since at least I gave the talks on Thursday night, so I think it might be good. So last time we were just starting chapter 14. So chapter 14 is called Refuting Extreme Conceptions. Yeah. And it's really, this is going into the analysis of things being one or different, of being singular or plural. And it's also going into the analysis of what's the relationship between an object and its attributes, an object and its parts. When we talk about the attributes of an object, we could be talking about, how many of them there are, its impermanence, its color and shape and smell and taste. Those are all attributes of an object. So as we go through this, we'll start, analyzing, what's the relationship between all these attributes and the object itself. Okay? So we usually have the usual example is a pot. You have a pot for me? Okay. Okay. Oh, it's a heavy one. Okay. So, let's just review a little bit. Verse 326, if a thing did not depend on anything else at all, it would be self-established, but such a thing exists nowhere. Okay? So here we're being told what the definition of self-established or self-existent is, something that doesn't depend on anything else at all. Okay, that exists in and of itself, having its own nature, under its own power, can stand on its own. So something that doesn't depend on anything else. Specifically, it doesn't depend on causes and conditions. It doesn't depend on parts. It doesn't depend on having a mutual relationship with something else. It doesn't depend on being merely designated by term and concept. It's something that is what it is, independent of everything else. Okay? So the verse is saying that if a thing did not depend on anything else, it would be self-established, but nothing exists that doesn't depend on anything else. Okay, and so that means that there's nothing that is an absolute. Some people, when they talk about the two truths, instead of saying conventional and ultimate truth, they say conventional and absolute truth. And I think that translation is deceptive, because, you know, the ultimate truth exists. Emptiness is the ultimate truth. But emptiness is not an absolute, because an absolute implies, again, something that doesn't depend on anything else. Doesn't the word absolute imply that to you? To me, something that's absolute, it's out there, independent, okay? But nothing, even emptiness, exists independent of anything else. Everything exists dependent on something else. Okay? And then 327, the pot, the form is a pot. So, but they are not one. The pot that has form is not separate. The pot does not have form, nor does the form have a pot. Okay, so here we're going through four different ways in which the attribute form, and here form is meaning visual form, such as color and shape. So the relationship between, you know, color and shape, some kind of visible form, and the pot. Okay? So if this pot, okay, the composite, yeah, this pot is a composite, isn't it? It's composed of many different things. So if it existed from its own side, are the visible form and the pot one or different? Okay? So if we say, yeah, the form and the pot in the statement, the form is a pot, aren't inherently one, okay? These things aren't inherently one. Otherwise, yeah, if the form, or if we just even have the category form, yeah, being, because the word form is, it's used in many different ways. Sometimes it refers to visible form. Sometimes it refers to, the definition is, that which is suitable to be called form. Very helpful definition, right? But it, there it refers to sound, smell, taste, touch, all those kind of things. Okay? So the form is a pot. So if we say that, yeah, or the pot is a form, then whenever wherever there's a pot, or wherever there is form, then there would have to be a pot. Because if form, meaning that which is suitable to be called form, yeah, if it were the pot, then every time there was a form, like this is a form, then the pot would be here too. Okay? But that's clearly not so. Okay? So similarly, if the visible form were inherently one with the pot, then the pot could not have other qualities such as texture and, you know, shape that you feel, you know, with your tactile senses, or temperature, anything else. Because if the pot is color, or if the pot is what you, it is what you see with its your eyes, then it couldn't have any kind of tactile sensation, because you don't see the tactile sensation with your eyes. Okay, so here the word is means identical with. And that's the thing, that when we're talking, if things are inherently existent, then whenever there's two things, they have to either, if things existed inherently, they would have to be either completely identical, or they would have to be totally unrelated. Okay, because remember, inherent existent things are independent. You can't talk about them having any kind of dependent nature. Okay? If you think a pot which is distinct from visible form possesses, so you have a pot that's distinct from visible form, but it possesses form the way a person possesses a cow. In other words, it possesses color and shape as something that's something that's completely different from it or separate from it. Okay, so in that case, the color of the pot would be something completely different from the pot, and you would be able to see the pot without seeing the color. Okay, but you can't do that. Yeah, because the color is not something that is totally separate from the pot. It's not the pot, because if the color were the pot, or the pot were the color, then the pot couldn't have, you know, other kinds of physical qualities. But also it can't be separate from color and shape, because if it were, then, you know, it wouldn't have any color and shape, and how could you look at it and identify it? Okay? So you with me how we're analyzing it? Like, what's the, you know, color is an attribute of the pot, but what's the relationship between that color and the pot? Okay? So the pot doesn't have form that is something that depends on it. Okay, so if it did, again, the pot and the form could be apprehended separately. Like, first there's a pot, and then there's the color that depends on the pot. But that isn't the way it is when we look at the pot, is it? We see the color of the pot all at the same time, you know. And similarly, the visible form doesn't have a pot that depends on it. Yeah, like first there's the color and then the pot comes along. So we say that the color is one nature with the pot, okay, but it isn't the pot. One nature means that the two things happen at the same time, and one cannot exist without the other. Yeah? But being one nature does not mean that two things are identical. Okay? So existence is another characteristic or another attribute of pot. The pot has existence, doesn't it? Okay? So the verse 328 says, since the two are seen to have dissimilar characteristics, if the pot is separate from existence, why would existence not also be separate from the pot? So if the pot and existence as an attribute of the pot, the attribute of being existent, if those two things were separate, then you could have the pot without having the pot being existent. Or you could have existence without the pot as something that exists, because those two things are totally unrelated. Okay? So it gets kind of crazy if things are inherently existent. Yeah. So one, you know, the quality of being one thing, like we look at this and we say, how many pots are there? There's one. Okay? So it has the attribute of being one. So similar to existence, you know, as existence was an attribute of pot, being one is also an attribute of the pot. Okay? So if one is not accepted as the pot also is not one. Okay, so if, you know, is, what's the relationship between the pot and being one? Because we say the pot is one, right? There's one pot, the pot is one. But is pot the same thing as being one? No, because there's lots of other things that also have that attribute of being one. The telephone, this telephone is one thing. Okay, the microphone is one thing. Yeah. And they also can't be the same thing because the pot has other attributes besides the attribute of being one thing. For example, it's impermanent. Yeah, or it's black, or it's, you know, smooth on the outside, or it, you know, whatever, like that. Okay? So if the pot were identical with one of its attributes, then the pot couldn't have any other attributes. Okay, because it would only be able to have that one attribute, like being impermanent or being one. And in addition, that attribute could only be applied to the pot. It couldn't apply to anything else. Okay? So here again, it's like if things are inherently existent, they can't be totally identical. They can't be totally unrelated. Yeah. Then what are they? The only other option is that they're dependent, that they depend on each other. Okay? So if they're dependent, then they can't exist from their own side or by their own entity. Okay? So then, if we get, you know, any object has more than one attribute. Yeah. So it's not any of the attributes, and none of the attributes are the pot. How about the attributes? How do they relate to each other? Okay. So visible form, color, let's say, is an attribute of the pot, and so is. Shall we call this a large pot?
Medium.
Okay. Of course, if you had one of those big pots that they were using when they cooked in India for the tens of thousands of people at the teachings, this would be a teeny tiny itsy bitsy pot. Because those pots, I don't know, maybe what? 10 feet in diameter? Yeah, I would say a good 10 feet in diameter.
It could be a label.
It could be a label? Oh, yeah. Right, this could be you come then the label that you use. Okay, so we'll call it medium. Yeah. So somebody's saying that attributes qualify only substantial entities. So this has to be something that exists in its own right in order to have an attribute. But it's quite strange, you know, because, somebody's saying that that attributes qualify substantial entities, but that one attribute does not qualify another attribute. Okay. Yeah. So if the size of the substantial entity, the pot, and the size of its visible form are the same, why is the attribute form not large, just as the substantial entity pot is large? Okay. So if we say that the pot is a substantial entity, and the attribute of color is the pot, then if the pot is large, wouldn't the color also be large? Yeah. But is the color actually large?
Is black large? Is large a quality of black? It's not, is it? Yeah. So it's interesting when you look at what the pot is. The pot has a bunch of different attributes, yeah, that it depends on. But none of the attributes really are attributes for each other. Yeah, all the attributes are distinct things, but they're all one nature with pot, but they aren't one nature with each other. Yeah. Okay. So it gets kind of strange, you know, when you look at the pot and you think of it, you know, like, okay, it has these attributes. It has color and taste and smell and texture. You know, if you hit it, it has a sound. Yeah. But those are all different qualities that don't pertain to each other. Yeah. I mean, the pot is black. This pot is also clean, but you can't say black is clean. Or if the pot had a smell, put some thieves in it, or, you know, some old food in it or something, you know, then the pot has a smell, but it doesn't, but the smell and the color are different things. Yeah. So it's kind of strange, isn't it, if all these attributes, if you see all these attributes as inherently existent, independent things, then how could they all apply to the same thing here? Yeah, they couldn't. You couldn't get them all to apply. So those attributes are distinct, but they can't just exist as isolated attributes, because then they couldn't all be applicable to the pot. Okay. So an object doesn't exist by its own nature separate from its attributes and characteristics. Because if it did, you could identify the pot without identifying any of its attributes. So you could see the pot without seeing the color. You could smell the pot without smelling, you know, this. You could identify the pot without, you know, feeling any kind of sensation in your skin. Yeah. Because if the object exists by its own, you know, nature, independent of its attributes, you can identify it without identifying any of its attributes. And it's funny, because sometimes when we look at the pot, it looks like there is a pot right here inside this, doesn't it? There is a pot, a real pot. But if there is a real pot, can we identify it without identifying any of its attributes or characteristics? It would be impossible, wouldn't it? If you took away every single attribute of the pot, you couldn't have a pot. And yet, the way the pot appears to our consciousness, which is obscured by ignorance, is that it is there independent of anything else. Doesn't it look that way? There it is. Yeah. But, I mean, this is what's really interesting to do when you're on retreat, you know? And you just sit down, you look out at something, and whatever you happen to see, you analyze the relationship between it and its attributes, or it and its parts. Because it looks so real there. Yeah? But if you took away the black, and you took away the hardness, and you took away the smoothness, and you took away whatever that metal tastes like, and you took away the smell, how in the world would you identify this as being here? The whole thing would vanish, wouldn't it? It would be totally non-existent if you took away its attributes. And yet, it is not its attributes. It's not its attributes, but if you take away the attributes, the pot disappears. Interesting. You take away something that is not it, and it disappears. But that's... It's true, isn't it? You take away all these things that are not a pot, but the pot disappears. That's because you put together a bunch of things that are not a pot, and a pot appears. It's true, isn't it? Yeah, you put together a bunch of things that aren't a pot, and you get a pot. That's kind of magic, isn't it? Yeah. Totally merely labeled, totally dependent. Yeah, totally nothing. You know, when you start looking at the pot like that, it's like the pot is nothing. What pot is there? There's just all these attributes there. And how do you put together a bunch of non-pots and get a pot? Yeah? It's crazy. How do you do that? And yet, that's exactly what happens. The pot arises due to non-pots. Okay. Now, apply that to yourself. You put together a bunch of things that are not me, and you get me. Okay. You take away a bunch of things that are not me, and I disappear. Where was I to start with if you take away a bunch of things that are not me? Yeah? If you take away the body, you take away the mind, where do you have the person? Gone. So what was this person to start with if you can take away things that weren't it and it disappears? Yeah? Who am I really if all you need to do is take away my body and take away my mind and then I'm not here? But something inside of us screams out, "But I'm here! I'm still here! You can take away the whole universe, and I'm still here." Don't you feel like that? You could take away absolutely everything, and I am still here. Yeah? And yet, all you have to do is take away two things, the body and the mind, and we're in fact not here. But look how strong we grasp onto feeling like we're some independent, self-existent present. Quite amazing, you know? When you really use reasoning and you start looking at this, then you get a feeling. You know, when the Buddha says that we're ignorant, sentient beings, you say, yeah, he's right, you know? Because you start looking and like, how can I possibly think I'm here if all you have to do is take away the body and the mind and I've disappeared? How can I think that there's anything here even when there is a body and mind? Because the body's not me and the mind's not me. So what in the world is me? And yet there's something inside that screams out, me! Isn't there? Or am I the only one? Okay. So verse 332, because the pot is not separate from its characteristics, okay, it is not one. Because there's many characteristics. Okay, so because the pot is not separate from its characteristics, it is not one. Yeah, because if it's not separate from its characteristics, it's related to its characteristics. So the characteristics are many, mm-hmm. So the pot should be many. Okay, so you should have many pots. If there is not a pot for each of the characteristics, then plurality is not feasible. Okay, so this verse is examining oneness or difference, or oneness or plurality. Okay, so the Sautantrikas, our good friends, yeah, say that the pot and its eight substantial particles are one truly existent entity. Okay? So the eight substantial particles, remember earth, water, fire, air, okay, those are the elemental particles, and then you have the derivatives, you know, color, and you know, visible form, smell, taste, and tactile sensation. Right? Okay. So, yeah. So, the pot would not be a truly existent entity because it is, by its own entity, one with and not separate from its eight substantial particles that have diverse characteristics. So because you have eight things that are different, then you should have eight pots. Okay. On the other hand, yeah, so either you should have one substantial particle because you have one pot, or you need to have eight pots because you have eight substantial particles. Okay. But it's neither way, is it? Yeah. Because the pot and the substantial particles that make it up are not inherently the same, and they're not inherently different either. Yeah. So it's interesting, isn't it? You know, I mean, we say, somebody says, how many things are here? One. Right? We all agree, one. So since this is simply a composite, if we take this old view of how things are made out of, or even you take the scientific view, you know, all the different elements that make up the pot, or all these different atomic particles that make up the pot. Yeah, there's many of them, aren't there? So is there one thing here or many things? Yeah, is there one thing or is there many things? You can't have, something can't be one and it can't be many at the same time. If it's inherently existent, it can only be
one of the two.
So, is it one or is it many?
It's one.
It's one? Then, all of its parts are exactly identical with each other. Yeah. And it only has one part, and it only has one characteristic, or one attribute. And that one attribute is all the attributes, but how can all the attributes become one when they're all, which is already more than one? Yeah? So is it one or is it many? Okay? Remember when Jeffrey had us do that thing and he kept out, what is this, one or many? We all dutifully said, one! Mm-hmm. What is this, one or many? One! 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 So you add one and one and you get one. Yeah, it's the new math, isn't it? Okay. Then 333. The tangible and the intangible cannot be said to coalesce. Thus, it is in no way feasible for these forms to coalesce. So this is refuting the composite as a truly existent single unit through the coming together of its constituents. So that's what you were just asserting. Yes.
Refuting the composite as a truly existent unit?
Yeah. That already sounds crazy. It's a composite that is a truly existent unit. Yeah? I mean, when you ask yourself, that's crazy. How can it be a composite and be a truly existent unit? Yeah? Okay. So someone says, the pot is a single unit. That's her. Through the coming together of the eight particles. Yeah. And Aryadeva says, the pot's composite can't be a truly existent single unit because it's a collection or a coalescence of eight substantial particles, such as visible form, smell, taste, tactile, and because the four elements, which are tangibles and thus objects of the tactile sensation, and visible form, which are, remember visible form is one of the eight objects, and smell is a particle, form is a particle, smell is a particle, taste, tactile things, they're all particles. Okay? So, some of the particles are tangible, that you can touch with your fingers. Yeah. If all those particles were inherently one thing, then they should all be tangible. Is smell tangible? Is taste tangible? Is color tangible? No. Okay. So that's why it says the tangible and the intangible cannot be said to coalesce. So you can't say that these eight substantial particles coalesce to become one unified thing, because things that are tactile by nature, tangible by nature, and things that are intangible by nature, like color and smell and taste, those things can join and become the same thing. Okay? So they can't touch and coalesce. So the pot consists of different parts and different attributes that are not the same, So there can't be a pot, which is one thing. Then, verse 334, form is a component of the pot, and thus for a start is not the pot. Since the compound does not exist, neither do the components. Whoa! So somebody says, even though there's no mutual contact of all these eight substantial particles, because some are tangible and others aren't, their combination is a truly existent pot.
Yeah.
So even though there's no contact, these eight, like all these atoms and molecules, from a scientific view, don't contact or touch each other, but still there's a collection of them that becomes one thing. Huh? Yeah? Okay. So the pot's visible form is a component of the part, or an attribute of the pot. And thus it is not the pot, because a component of the pot is something possessed by the pot. The pot is the whole, the components are the parts. The whole possesses the parts, so they can't be the same thing. Okay. So the pot's visible form, let's say its color, is a component of the pot, and thus is not the pot, just as the smell and so forth are not the pot. Okay. And the components are also not the composite. Okay. The components aren't the composite, are they? Because each component is its own individual thing, and none of them are the composite of all of the components coming together. Okay. So does the composite exist separately from the components?
No,
it doesn't exist separately from the components. Is it one with the components? No. Is it one with the components? Is it identical with the components? No. Is it separate from the components?
No.
Well, if it's not separate, then it must be one. Is it inherently separate from are the components inherently separate from the composite?
No.
Are they conventionally separate? Yeah.
Distinct, but not separate.
Huh?
Distinct, but not separate.
No, but distinct and separate mean the same thing. I could say distinct here, too. Okay. So is a composite one thing? It can't be, because it's a composite. Yeah? But the components are many, but the composite is not the components. And the components are not the composite. Can you identify the composite without the components? Can you identify the components without the composite? Yes, maybe. Like what?
You can identify black without identifying a pot.
Okay, or you can identify a car wheel without identifying a car. But can you really identify a car wheel if there were no cars?
You might say it's a wheel off of something.
Yeah, you have to take the wheel off of something. So it can't be a car part unless cars exist. The car doesn't have to be there, but you have to have, cars have to exist in order to have car parts. So the car parts and the car are dependent on each other. Can you have a car without having car parts? No. Can you have car parts without having a car? No. Can you have the wheel of a car without having the car? Yeah, you can have the wheel right there. Yeah. So the car doesn't need to be there. But cars need to be an object of knowledge. Yeah. Because you can't say that something is a part of something that's totally non-existent. But my body and my mind are parts of me, but you can't find me.
And yet you're saying you exist.
Yeah. And the color, you know, remember we just looked at this before, and the color and shape and all the different attributes? Yeah. Without them, you wouldn't have a pot. Yeah. So it's kind of strange, isn't it? Here's the pot, which is one thing. Is the pot a composite?
Yes.
So is the pot one thing?
Yes.
Oh, some people think there's many pots and some people think there's one pot. Okay, there's one pot. Yeah. The pot is a composite. Is a composite one thing?
No.
Then how can the pot be a composite?
Eventually,
it
depends on those things.
Yeah. Okay. So, so this guy who says, even though there's no mutual contact of these eight substantial particles, still their combination is a truly existent pot. We have to say, sorry. Yeah, that doesn't work. Okay. Because each of the attributes, each of them is not a pot, and each of them doesn't have a pot. And the composite pot does not inherently exist. Okay. So if none of the parts of the pot are a pot, how could a collection of non-pots be a pot? Okay, anything we look at is a collection of things that are not it. Strange, isn't it? Things are made out of, well, one way, yes, of course, things are made out of things that are not it.
So it needs to be made.
Yeah, because it needs to be made. And it can't be made out of things that are it, it has to be made out of things that aren't it. On the other hand, if none of these things are it, how can it come into being?
conceived, takes all those non-pot parts and says, pot.
Yeah. Yeah, you can see it's the mind, isn't it? That takes all the things that aren't pot and puts them together conceptually. And as soon as we conceive of something and give it a name, it seems to have some existence from its own side. It's like we forget that we're the ones who conceived and labeled it. We're the ones who put the parts together. And instead, we think that now it has its own essence. Not that it came about dependent on our having labeled it. It's like sitting here in this room. Yeah, we can say this room is one thing, right? Yeah? I mean, if you're outside and somebody said, go to the room where we have the Thursday night teachings, there's one room. Isn't there? You don't go to many rooms, you go to one room. Yet when you're in the room, or even when you're outside, you can look around and see there's many things. Yeah? So where did one room come from if there's many things? Well, we say that's because we're all in it. Well, even you empty us all out of it, yeah, how do you get a room when there's carpeting and paint and drywall and wood? Yeah, when you look at all of those things separately, you know, that's not a room, and that's not a room. The windows aren't a room. Clock's not a room. The carpet's not a room. The stairs aren't a room. So how did we get a room here? Yeah? And then you can begin to see it's only because our mind took all these different things and put them together. If you sit here and start thinking of each thing individually, the idea of one room disappears. Yeah? And all you see is isolated objects. But if you just change your mind in one way, then one room appears. Actually, nothing's changed. Yeah?
It seems like there's a lot of fear in me that if I let go of that grasping on a specific object, that I won't be able to relate to it properly if I stop thinking about it.
Yeah. Okay, so there's some fear that if I let go of seeing that object in the way that I'm so familiar with seeing it, that then I won't know how to relate to it anymore. Yeah, like I'll walk in here and I'll just stand here like, what do I do now, you know? Yeah? What is this place? Is it one? Is it many? Are the walls joined together or are the walls separate things? Are the windows in the walls or are the windows kind of separate things? Yeah? That just look like they're in the walls. And what's underneath the floor anyway, supporting this? There's nothing. There's air underneath the floor, isn't there? Yeah. So you can see how there's, you know, some fear that comes up, you know, because it is challenging our usual way of seeing things. like you said, fear of, like, I won't know how to relate to it anymore. But this can also give us an idea of why when people perceive emptiness, they then have some special powers about how they relate to material objects. Yeah? Because they don't see them as so solid and they don't relate to them in the old way, then they can relate to them in entirely new ways. Yeah? And then it doesn't seem so strange when they say that yogis can, you know, walk through walls or walk under the water or, you know, go under the water. Well, yeah, everybody can go under the water, can't they? Go under the earth. Yeah. Yeah, then it doesn't seem so strange, because if you don't conceive of things in the same way, it opens up the mind to relate to them in so many different ways, doesn't it? Instead of the same old, poor quality way of relating to things. Yeah? So that same thing happens with people, you know? If you don't see people as like one thing. Yeah? One thing. Oh, yeah, that creep. One creep. Yeah, one inherently existing creep. You know, but if you stop seeing somebody like that, then it opens the way. You can see them in so many more ways, can't you? Yeah, because you realize they aren't a creep, that there's nothing in them that is a creep. Yeah, we throw these labels around and we give people labels. That person's an idiot, one's a creep, one's a jerk, you know? And you see, actually, when you examine, there's nothing in that basis of designation that is that thing. Yeah?
Would you say that developing a more realistic way to relate to things that helps you realize emptiness, or is it something that you think maybe happens after you directly realize emptiness?
Well, developing a more realistic way of relating to things is definitely involved in the process of realizing emptiness. Yeah? Because, I mean, there's relating to it more realistically on a conventional level, but also relating to it more realistically by seeing its ultimate nature. Okay. So that's it. Okay. So the definition of whatever. Okay, so we did two verses today. Good. We'll get through this. So we'll take up on 3:35 next time. So we had a good review, huh? Okay. Yes.
This misunderstanding of a yogi who can eventually walk through walls. So the yogi's been realizing emptiness correctly for a long, long time.
Uh-huh.
Is that affecting the makeup of the body? Does the body shift as the mind develops and gets...
Okay. Can a yogi walk through walls because the realization of emptiness changes him physically? Or changes the... Does it change the yogi physically? Does it change the wall physically? I don't know. I think that they could probably walk through walls without either one of them changing physically. Because even science tells us that most of what's there is empty space. And most of our body is also empty space. And that this appearance of the wall being solid and of our body being solid
are both false appearances. Yeah? So maybe by seeing the wall as just a bunch of atoms and our body as just a bunch of atoms, then that makes it easier for the atoms just to go through each other.
But they never touch.
Yeah.
When you go like this, you're not actually touching this electromagnetic force that's repelling each other.
Yeah.
You never get on together.
Yeah.
So it's got to be something different.
No, I mean, all the atoms can go through each other, just, mm-hmm. you know.
Fire walking is an interesting analogy for me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like walking across fire.
Because people really do. Mm-hmm. They really can walk across fire and not burn.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, I don't understand it, but I've done it.
You've done it?
Many times.
Oh.
5 times I've done fire walking where you absolutely do it.
And you don't get burned.
You don't get burned. Sometimes people will walk. You know, it's a good, some of the ones even were circles, so you couldn't jump off, right? You had to walk all the way through it. You can. Some people would get to the other side, even be a half hour later, they'd suddenly start to blister. It's like you can't, you sort of freak out and go, oh, I did that, boom. Then your feet would swell up. It's really phenomenal. I can't explain it, but it is an interesting thing as an example of how the mind and this can interrelate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The expression I've always heard is having control over the elements.
Yeah. Yeah. They talk about having control over the elements. But, you know, I wonder, I would think that there would probably be a different way of relating to the elements if you just had samadhi. Versus if you had realization of emptiness together with that. There's got to be some difference. But even with samadhi, you can, do a lot of these things. Oh, okay.
Why can an afflicted, ordinary individual see a yogi fly?
Why can an afflicted ordinary individual see a yogi fly?
Yeah.
Because it's Superman. Yeah, because the yogi flies. So why can't we see? The yogi flies, of course we can see. Yeah, we just think a yogi flying is something miraculous. But, you know, 200 years ago, people would have thought planes were miraculous. Yeah. Okay.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lhotse's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the 3 worlds always increase. Guru Anamandala Kamiryatayami. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May the born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezig, may you stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially Yashravasti Abbey in the west floor.